This morning reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhavira, chapter 19, Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So we'll chant responsibly text number 161, and I'll just read through the other texts and purports. Pratame upasa sattvic kare chagana.
Pratame upasa sattvic kare
chagana. Adhumule sakhi padi yaya vrindavana.
Pratame upasa sattvic kare chagana.
Pratame upasa sattvic kare chagana.
Pratame upasa sattvic kare chagana.
From the very beginning.
Upasakara.
Of the unwanted creatures. Karaye.
Does.
Chedana. Cutting away. Tabe.
Then only.
Mulasaka. The chief creeper.
Body.
Increasing. Yaya.
Goes.
Vrindavana.
The
lotus feet of Lord Shri Krishna in Vrindavan. Translation of purport by Sri Vaishnava Prabhupada. As soon as an intelligent devotee sees an unwanted creature, creeper growing beside the original creeper, you must cut it down instantly. Then the real creeper of Bhakti Lata Beej grows nicely, returns home, back to Godhead, and seeks shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna. The quote, if one is misled by unwanted creepers and is victimized, he cannot make progress back to Godhead. Rather, he remains within the material world and engages in activities having nothing to do with pure devotional service. Such a person may be elevated to the higher planetary systems, but because he remains within the material world, he is subject to the threefold miseries, material miseries. 6162. When the fruit of devotional service becomes ripe and falls down, the gardener tastes the fruit and thus takes advantage of the creeper and reaches, reaches the desired tree of the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Translation. There the devotee serves the lotus feet of the Lord, which are compared to a wish-fulfilling tree. With great bliss he tastes the juice and the fruit of love and becomes eternally happy. Sounds nice, doesn't it? Purport. The word taha indicates that in the spiritual world, one can taste the juice of the fruit of devotional service and thus become blissful. 164. To taste the fruit of devotional service at Goloka Vrindavan is the highest perfection of life. And in the presence of such perfection, the four material perfections, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, are very insignificant achievements. Report. The highest achievement attained by the Gyanis or impersonalists is becoming one with the Supreme, generally known as moksha, liberation. The highest achievement of the yogis are the eight material perfections such as anima, lagima, and prapti. Yet, these are nothing compared to the eternal bliss of a devotee who returns back to Godhead and tastes the fruit of devotional service. The lotus feet of the Lord. The material perfections up to the point of liberation are very insignificant in comparison. Therefore, the pure devotee is never interested in such things. His only interest is in perfecting his devotional service to the Lord. The pleasure of the impersonalist monist philosophers is condemned in the following verse, which is also found in Sri Rupa Goswami's Lalita Madhava. Translation. As long as there is not the slightest fragrance of pure love of Krishna, which is the perfected medicinal herb for controlling Lord Krishna within the heart, the opulences of material perfections, known as the cities, the brahminical perfections, such as sama, tiksha, and so on, the trance of the yogis, and the monastic bliss of Brahman, all seem wonderful for men. Report. There are different types of material perfections known as siddha, vrajya, brahminical qualifications, yogic trance, and merging into the Supreme. All these are certainly very attractive for a mundane person, but their brilliance exists only as long as one does not take to devotional service. Devotional service can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Controller of all universal affairs. The five rasas, mellows, in the transcendental world are practiced by the inhabitants of Goloka Vrindavan in neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. All these please the Lord so much that he is controlled by the devotees. For instance, Mother Yashoda, who was so advanced in devotional service that Krishna agreed to be controlled by her stick. Today's Dhammadhara sticka reference. In other words, The five principal mothers are so great and glorious that they are able to control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the material world, however, so-called cities of perfections manifest their brightness only as long as one is not interested in devotional service. In other words, the perfection of the karmis, jnanis, yogis, and others remains attractive only as long as one does not come to the point of devotional service, which is so great and significant that it can control the Supreme Controller, Krishna. Srila Prabhupada means here. It's interesting, this reference was there to Mother Yashoda's stick, because this is the month of Damodar, and each day we glorify that stick with singing the Damodar stick as an offering again to the Lord. And as explained very nicely in the translation of the Dhammadharastika, particularly the fourth of them, we have the same lesson that's being taught in these verses today, experienced in what we sang. You recall text number 4 of the Dhammadharastika says, O Lord, although you are able to give all kinds of benedictions, I do not pray to you for the boon of impersonal liberation, nor the highest liberation of eternal life in Vaikuntha, nor any other boon which may be attained by executing the 9 processes of bhakti. O Lord, I simply wish this form of yours as Bhagavad and Vrindavan may ever be manifest in my heart. For what use to me of any other boons beside this? And I listened carefully as the devotees sing this in the morning, and I'd just like to ask Divyananda Prabhu to repeat how he says, and I do not even want adding to know your future of Paramatma. He says it, of course, he's a devotee of Krishna, but he says it with such a flavorful manner that he doesn't care. Can you see?
I don't even want to know your future. Yeah. I mean, I really don't. It scares me. You know, being witness is everything I do. So, I sincerely pray that.
This is because the devotees taste something higher. And he doesn't even want to know. I don't even want to know your future of Paramatma.
Hey, thanks for acknowledging that.
Well, that's what it's about. It's all about taste, isn't it? Taste and experience. That's what the process of devotional service is in. We're getting that in these verses of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord instructing Sri Rupa Goswami. But it's all about experience. It's not about studying knowledge of the Shastra, perfecting yogic siddhis. It's not what it's all about. But it's about something higher. Puram drishva nivartati. What is that verse? Rasa vajra musha priyashya. Puram drishva nivartati. Does anybody know the English translation? It's also very instructive in terms of how we experience the spiritual world by cultivating knowledge. It brings us up to the point of entering into the spiritual world, as is described by this, how this creeper grows. In text number 161, it explains that two things are required. We need to know the false creeper, and you have to know the real creeper. So to do that, we study the Shastra. We also experience life under the modes of material nature. And the combination of these two things are meant to bring us to the point where we have a taste for transcendental activities, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. If we know very thoroughly the creepers of materialistic enjoyment or yogic perfection or jnanas of jnana, we don't go beyond that to the lotus feet of the Lord as is described in these verses. And what good will all those things be? We'll have to remain in this material world, although seemingly in an enjoyable situation, but not seeing the ultimate faults of this world and desiring to get out. So to do that, we need to experience the taste of devotional service. After receiving this instruction from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami wrote the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion Prabhupada has given us. And in there he explains how from the very beginning of devotional service, one has experiences or tastes which drive one on. But I'm just fond of all today, obviously takes us from the material tastes to higher and higher realms of happiness. But even in the spiritual world, there's a cumulative effect of the taste that brings us higher and higher and higher. So Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, from the very beginning, we have six experiences in which you can taste devotional service right from the very beginning. So I wanted to review those with everyone today. The six characteristics of pure devotional service. They are: one, Krishagni. It provides relief from material distress. Two, Subhadra. By practicing it, one attains auspiciousness. Three, Moksha Lagu Tarakata. It derives even the happiness of liberation. Four, Sudurlabha. It's really achieved. Five, Sandrananda Visheshatma. It automatically imbues Hum, with Johnston the Pleasure and Krishna Karshani, is the only means to attract Krishna. So these six characteristics of devotional service, true devotional service, can be described as different types of tastes that encourage one along the path. Some aspects of kleshagni, or that sinful activities, sinful reactions are burnt away. And so material distress is relieved. Actually, sometimes in my service I've talked with devotees that have thought about material activities, that if you do them right, you can escape the distress and misery of material activities. If you just get it right, if you just do it right. But it's not a fact. All the endeavors that we make materially are covered by various types of faults. And no matter what we do, we cannot escape those faults. We can't get it right. It's not right. It's wrong. And it's always will be experienced as wrong. But by taking the pure devotional service, automatically we get relief from material distress. And the point of getting relief from material distress is that we can taste the transcendental. Actually, I advise devotees that come to me like that, that maybe they should take a different look at material miseries, and instead of thinking of them as something that are opposing their Krishna consciousness, to try to understand that it's a taste that can actually help us in the progress of Krishna consciousness. Help us in the sense that knowing that we can't get to perfection, we can't do them properly, that we endeavor not to taste them, or to taste them in such a way that we can see them as impetuses for getting out of this material world. If we see them as impetuses for a higher goal, Param Dushpana Vartati, as if we see them as impetuses to get out of this material world rather than obstacles keeping us in the material world, we can make great progress. We can, each time we taste the bitterness of this material world, we can use that to sweeten the taste of the spiritual world, knowing that that's where we're going by performing pure devotional service. So kleshagni, the first of the characteristics of devotional service, and help us as we progress. Subhadra, all auspiciousness. What does that mean, all auspiciousness? What kind of things are auspicious? Well, Rupa Goswami describes that development of so many qualities, the change in our character that we've so longed for as we only go through one self-improvement program after another. What we're longing for is development of saintly qualities, And that becomes available to us by the practice of pure devotional service. Note that all these are experiences, not armchair or academic philosophy, but experiences. Auspiciousness brings superior happiness to our lives. So dullabha, difficult to achieve, means it's unavailable, unattainable by our own efforts. We must depend upon the devotees of the Lord and the Lord Himself. These two things we also see in the Damodara Lila. When Yashoda tried to bind Krishna with the rope, it was always two fingers too short. What were those two fingers ultimately that enabled Mother Yashoda to bind Krishna? The effort of the devotee and the mercy of the Supreme Lord. These two combined and give us the experiences of being able to please the Lord. So, difficult to achieve. By ourselves, it's not possible. Mother Yashoda brought so much work trying to bind Krishna's belly, but she couldn't do it. But when she got the mercy based on her endeavor, then she was able to bind Krishna. We too can experience Krishna consciousness at levels which we thought we'd never be able to attain by making a concerted effort, not being distracted by materialist desires, and receiving the mercy of the Lord. I recently read a letter that Prabhupada wrote to a musician. What was her name? Coltrane.
Alice Coltrane.
Alice Coltrane, yes. She was very interested in chanting Hare Krishna at one point during her career. She even, in San Francisco, came to the Rath Yatra and gave a free concert. And she was chanting Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada wrote her a letter, encouraged her to chant. But he made the point that you can't chant for materialistic things or goals or experiences. As long as you chant with spiritual goals in mind, then chanting Hare Krishna will be of great benefit to you. Even though it's rarely attained, it's available if we do it with the right consciousness. So Sundarananda Visheshat uncalculably convinced bliss. This is something that, as long as we're in the material world, we can't experience. But as these verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we're studying today explain, that when we go to the spiritual world through the practice of devotional service, we break through like that creeper breaks through, and we take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, and then incalculable spiritual bliss becomes available to us. We have to maintain faith in the beginning stages of devotional service, in the practice of sadhana bhakti. That's our endeavor. Not that we endeavor for mundane things and we get Krishna's mercy, but we perform sadhana bhakti as given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And we
we can actually take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, and thus, as it describes in the verse today, is nicely described. So let me use my words, use the words from the Shastra. Open pages. There the devotees serve the lotus feet of the Lord, which are compared to a wish-fulfilling tree. With great bliss, he tastes the juice of the fruit of love and becomes eternally happy. Eternally happy. All this is available to us, and if we do it sincerely, then Krishna will help us. We know the story of Narada Muni's previous life. When he was engaged in meditating on the Supreme Lord exclusively after leaving his home, having his mother die of a snake bite, leaving his home. He was able to get the mercy of the Lord through his effort, even though that mercy was just for a moment. When Lord Vishnu appeared before him, he explained that, "You will not see me again in this life. But I appeared before you just to encourage you to continue your execution of devotional service." So that's available to us as well. If we sincerely engage in devotional service, one of the six characteristics is that it's the only way to attract Krishna. So even in the beginning, these six characteristics are in the beginning, the very beginning of the process of Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Rasa. So from the very beginning, even Krishna himself will give us, encourage us, will give us encouragement. Not saying he's going to appear before all of us, but in different ways, the Lord does encourage us individually in our service, and we can see that in our heart of hearts. So, these instructions are meant to encourage us, keep us on the right path, so we may maintain faith, and we can ultimately taste. That's the operative word here, is taste. Devotional service is about tasting Krishna, or experiencing so many wonderful things. Just like in the morning here when we do the Dhammadharastika, an atmosphere is created. I think yesterday, or I wasn't here yesterday, but the day before, the lights were left on. Everyone was off of them. He went. It wasn't the same when the lights are turned off. There's an atmosphere that's created as part of the devotional mood. Similarly, at the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan, when they do Dhammadharastika after the evening arti, the temple is so crowded. But if you stand in the Didi Mandap and look back over the temple, you can see that when they start distributing the giviks, there's a wave of giviks, the lights that flow very nicely across the temple. So these experiences give us some taste. It's not just academic, it's not just management. It's actually an effort to create taste which increases our desire more and more. Because ultimately it's all about taste. So are there any comments or questions on these subject matters? Reflections? Chastisements? Yes?
What would you say for us? In what form we may see Krishna? I mean, certainly we won't see Krishna like Narad Muni. But what does seeing mean? Certainly, Krishna gives us darshan. Maybe you can say something on that.
Well, I think you were mentioning something just the other day about how we execute our service, our duties, even material duties, so-called material duties. We execute them in different ways. Sometimes we don't have the best attitude. But when we see, I mean, just think of your, well, I had an experience when I was before as a devotee, but kind of goes at the point I'm trying to make. I was in a car with my father, and the car stopped. It was a small car, so if you pushed it, you could jump start it, and it would go. So the car stopped, and he asked me to get out and push the car. And when I was out there pushing the car, I didn't like that, first of all. And so I was personally like a sailor. And he was hearing me. I didn't know he was hearing me. So he was hearing me when I got back into the car. He told me that I heard you out there. And it was kind of funny, but it's like that with Krishna. If we do our service begrudgingly, and Krishna may show us, you know, at some point in time that I know how you're doing it. I know that, you know, but you shouldn't have that kind of attitude. You should have a better attitude. You get some understanding through different ways that our attitude wasn't the best. So that's one way in which we can experience Krishna, that someone reminds us, well, actually, you know, you do your service a little bit better, maybe more pleasing to Krishna. That's just one way. But there are other direct ways. I mean, I think Sankirtan devotees, they have the most experience of this because of all the wonderful experiences they have. That's what's so wonderful about hearing Sankirtan stories. Because you see Krishna acting in people's lives. And so that's a very important way to see Krishna's hand. Because we're actually his instrument. And he's using us in different ways to benefit others. And he gives us the opportunity to see that in our service. So that's one way. Is that sufficient? You have some idea also?
No, you're just talking about Sankirtan stories. And thank you, I appreciate your answer. You're just talking about Sankirtan stories. And just last week we went out, you know, at Santa Fe. And I was talking to two boys and we were, you know, we had a little sitting on Harinam. And so I asked them, I said, oh, do you play any instruments? Sometimes we ask them like that, so, you know. I said, do you play some instruments? They said, oh, no. There were two friends. And, no, we don't play any. I said, you must be playing something. And one of the friends says, oh, he plays a flute. I say, you play a flute? And he says, no, I don't play any flute. And then the friend says, no, he plays a flute. I said, well, do you play a flute? He says, I've learned. I said, so you should bring your flute and play here with us. And he says, if I play a flute, I'm going to spoil your thing, you're so expert musicians. And I start cracking up that none of us are musicians. Anyway, so finally he said, okay. And then I had Reservoir of Pleasure in my hand. And I said to him, you see, what does God play? And he's like, oh yeah, he plays a flute. I said, that's right, he plays a flute. So his whole demeanor just really perked up. And then he became really enthusiastic. And then he said, yes, next time I come here, I'll bring my flute and I'll play. So I felt like Krishna was just very, was present there to show him that Krishna plays the flute, and he felt encouraged.
I wanted to ask you, does Krishna Akarshani mean one who attracts Krishna or one who completely attracts Krishna? Does Krishna Akarshani mean Krishna gets attracted, or does it mean Krishna gets completely attracted?
Well, I think the phrase used is the only way to attract Krishna.
And that maybe...
In other words, someone may have all kinds of material abilities, but if in materialistic ways they think they can please Krishna by giving billions of dollars for a temple or doing things in which they're expecting some return, Krishna is not attracted by that. He's so great, he's so beautiful, he's so full of opulences that anything material can't attract him. So only pure devotional service, even if it's very humbly rendered, and even if it's insignificant, if it's genuine service, then Krishna is appreciated.
Oh, that's such a sweet answer. And second question, can you kindly elaborate? I think there was one point in the purport about weeds, right? Weeds in devotional service. Maybe I missed if you have elaborated, but can you please elaborate more on that point?
Weeds or the false creeper?
Yes.
Well, that's described in verses leading up to this. What's the difference between the false creeper? And those things are material desires, even as described in verses today, desire for liberation, desire for material perfection, yogic perfection, liberation. These are false creepers that have to be removed. So needs, we can also look at it as in terms of weeds in our devotional service, and attentive chanting, not being taking advantage of the association of devotees with the best kind of service attitude. All these things, desire for position, all these things may seem like they're desirable for the devotee, but they're not, and so we have to make the distinction between what's not desirable and what is desirable. Yes?
I have a Sankirtan story from yesterday. Yeah. I drove to Ocala to do Sankirtan. I looked on my phone and it said there's a 10% chance of rain. I figure it's not going to rain. So I get to Ocala and a huge black cloud comes and rains right on. And I'm like, oh, come on, Indra, give me a break here. We're on the same team. So I got about a half an hour of Sankirtan in, and then it rained. So I was mad. So I went store to store. I usually don't do that unless I have to, but I said, that's it, I'm here. So I walked into the store and I handed the guy Bhagavad Gita. And the guy grabs it and he's so happy. He goes, oh, I had this book back in California 16 years ago. He said, this weird looking guy in a robe handed me the book. And he gave it to me, and he said, But then he asked me for money, which I thought was hilarious. And he said, I said, okay, so I gave him some money, and he took the book home, and he said, I read part of it, and I really liked it. And he said, but something happened to it. I haven't seen this book for 16 years. And he said, this is very special. I was just so happy, because, you know, I'm in the rain, and now I'm going to meet this guy. And the guy hugged me, you know, he was so happy to get the book, which, you know, I mean, a lot of people give them a lot of books, and they're pretty happy about it, but they're usually not like, this guy was just like in bliss. So I went back to him, and I gave him a couple more books, too, because I just like the fan of spark. But it was so, I felt so rewarded by learning Shananda, because I was determined that I'm not going to not distribute just because it's raining. But I was mad. I was really angry. I had an attitude. I was like, you're not going to stop me with a little cloud, and I'm doing this. Then later it did stop raining, and I went back out. But anyway.
Thank you so much.
The Vice says we have to distribute 2.5 million Gitas this year, so.
Wow. Is that seeing Krishna?
Ask the person that was there.
Well, who else? Who else does stuff like this?
Just like this one guy, he got a Bhagavad Gita. He was walking through the mall, and the devotee sold him a Bhagavad Gita and a BTG. And when they were leaving the mall, one guy said, I don't want this book. And he gave it to this devotee who came to the temple. He came to the temple with the BTG in his hand. And then back in the old days, when he opened the cover, there was a picture of Prabhupada, and there'd be a morning walk sometimes there. So this devotee came in, and he stopped the mic. And I opened the door. I want to meet the guru. And he said, I want to become one of the disciples. And he thought that picture was all the devotees. You know, there was like 8 devotees in this morning walk picture. And he thought, there's 8, I want to be the 9th one.
Yeah. Wow.
And he just walked, he was 18. He just walked in the door with the BTG and the Gita in his hand. He didn't even read those at all, but he had them. And he had some attraction. And he surrendered that day, and he never left. He got initiated, he became Jiva Goswami.
Yeah.
And he became a book distributor too for years. So. Anyway.
Actually, I was just reading or hearing from Indradumna Swami about how special it is when someone comes to a temple and walks in and says they want to surrender their life. I mean, it's rarely achieved, one of the 6 characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. When someone does that, comes to that stage of doing that, we should do all we can to protect that tender creeper, because it's so special, so rare that someone gets an opportunity. And it's often experienced by someone coming for the first time to the temple, walking in the door, and then never leaving. So, Indradumna Swami was making that point about devotee relationships. Or maybe it was Radhana Swami, one of the two. Well, we certainly hope that we get good news on Mukunda Maharaj, such a special devotee. He found Prabhupada the door to open that we can walk through. Just think of how his service is so important. He's the one that got 26 Second Avenue so people could walk in and surrender their lives.
Plus, he's a musician, a ranger, you know, the Govinda album, the whole thing. I mean, who is he?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And he's like 79 years old.
Okay. It's Richard Tenshaw to meet the key.